So hear me out. What if you could grow 300 plus plants without hauling watering cans to the shower every weekend or even dealing with soil? Today, Kay, a dear friend of mine from In Rooted Love, is back with Passive Hydro 2.0, and we are getting into the real life nitty-gritty of passive hydroponics or semi-hydro, root pruning, reservoir drama, fertilizer fears, and what happens when you forget your plants for 2 months. Because I know I have. I'm excited to be bringing this to you in the Best of Growing Joy series, where we bring our most popular episodes back from way, way back from the beginning of the show, 8 years ago, and bring them to the top of the feed for those of you who are new here, because we have so many amazing educational episodes for you. So if you've dabbled in LECA or you're hydro curious, or maybe you've been doing this for a while and you want to nerd out on a different level, Kay's the person to do it with. And this episode will help you troubleshoot, level up, and grow with way more confidence. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Welcome back to Bloom and Grow Radio, Kay.
Hey, Maria. Thanks so much for having me back. I'm so excited.
We're doing this interview almost a year to the day of the airing of our first episode together, which was in October of 2019. So it's so great to have you back for an update, a recap. And we're kind of calling this Passive Hydro 2.0, like next level beyond our basic episode we had together.
Thanks so much for having me. This is fun. I enjoyed last time and I'm totally looking forward to our chat today.
So before we dive into all of the questions that I have for you, now that I and many of our listeners have been inspired to kind of start moving over to Passive Hydro, how has your collection been? What's your update in the last year of your soil-free household and your tremendous plant collection?
Oh my goodness. Well, it's grown both in quantity and also just the plants themselves have grown a lot. And I'm still loving it. I still love Passive Hydro, semi-hydro. They still grow everything in that method. And thankfully, the space in our house allows us to continue adding to the collection. But I think we're probably going to reach the max here soon.
What's your number right now?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you think you're over 300?
I hope not. But realistically, it's possible. But I have a lot of little plants. You've seen the Hoya wall. I think there's over 50 Hoyas on that one wall alone. And they're all tiny. They're in 3-inch pots.
Do you have floor-to-ceiling windows in your house that you just get so much light? Or do you have a lot of grow lights?
No. So no to the grow lights and no to the floor-to-ceiling. I would love floor-to-ceiling windows. The location of our house, it's just perfect. My husband found this. I kind of sent him down here with a mission to find a house with really great lighting. And he found a house at the end of the street. So there aren't any other houses that obstruct. Well, we have one house to one side of us, but it's on the northern side. So that really doesn't matter. And we have unobstructed views on all the other sides. So the backside of our house gets really great all day eastern exposure. The Hoya wall gets all day southern exposure. The window there is frosted. So even though we live farther south and we get all that southern light, it is filtered. We haven't had any like sunburn issues there. And then my studio and all the other rooms sit on the west side of the house. So we get really bright light all throughout the day. And then later in the afternoon, we get that just gorgeous direct sunlight. So we got really lucky. He gets a lot of brownie points for finding this house because he got the light just right. I just remember telling him, I was like, I just need big windows in all the right directions.
And right.
Got it.
I don't care how many bathrooms we have. Right. Billy and I are starting to look at buying a house and becoming grownups. And like one of my random things that I really want is a window in our bathroom because I've lived in New York City apartments. So I've never had a bathroom with a window in it before. And all I want is like a jungle vibe bathroom.
Yeah.
It's just the little things.
I mean, if push comes to shove, Billy could always just make you a window.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're working on it. We're figuring it out.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll be grownups one day. So before we dive into our 2.0, I've already told the listeners, go listen to our first episode before we listen to this episode. It's linked in the show notes if you're just hearing this. The first episode we did is a real basic of passive semi-hydro. Everybody calls it semi-hydro, but it's actually passive hydro. And it's kind of a thing that we're not supposed to call it semi-hydro. We're supposed to call it passive hydro. So can you kind of give us a breakdown of what it actually is?
Yeah. So semi-hydro, passive hydro, it's the same thing. So if anybody sees anyone calling it semi or passive, it really is just the same thing. And what it is just a form of hydroponic growing that doesn't use any pumps for any of the movement. And so what we're looking at is for the medium, we're using a porous, inert, inorganic media that just helps with the water and nutrient transfer from your water reservoir up to the plants via the roots through capillary action. And that's all it is.
That's all. And the difference being hydroponics, there's a pump involved, right, blowing bubbles and air into the water. And with passive hydro, there's no pump and you're using this specific media. That's what we're going to get into, LECA or PON, which is the next 2.0 thing we're going to talk about a little bit later today. So yeah, other people call it soil free. So if people don't want soil in their house, and I know you go into that story for you, that was something important. It's the perfect option. And I also feel like for plant parents that want plants in their house, but are not able to water a lot. Like for me, in my plant parent personality profiles that I have, the low-key plant parent, someone who might travel a lot, someone who might really just not have a lot of time to like tend to their plants every day. I think passive hydro is such a great option because you're really just dealing with your plants like once a month-ish.
Yeah, it's great. I've got two little ones here at home who keep me busy. And every day there's always a plant to tend to. But it's not like I don't have to move it all the way to the shower and let it get rained on for its watering. Like I could literally just walk by with one watering can, top off real quick, and then be done. Now, there are bigger and more involved maintenance items that I do quarterly and, you know, semi-annually. But for the most part, like my day-to-day plant routine, super chill. It's super easy. Like they don't stress me out.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't, you know, like the plants keep me happy. And I think I've found a very great way to live harmoniously with the plants. And we found that balance in caring for the plants as well as enjoying them. It's not always just care, care, care.
Your little boys like who walk around and spritz your plants are so cute. They're like my favorite when they're up on your social media. I love them. They're so cute.
They're in for a rude awakening when they realize that most people grow their plants in organic media and they'll be like, well, where's the clay balls?
Or just that like most people don't have 200 plants in their house.
There's that too.
They'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. So I want to give an update to you and troubleshoot with you. When we did our first interview a year ago, I was still on the road with cats. I wasn't even home with my collection when we did our interview, but I got really curious. You really sold me on semi-hydro and I got really curious about experimenting. So I was home for literally 12 hours. And I remember I set up my camera and texted you a lot and set up like, I think I transferred an orchid, a pilea that I had knocked off and maybe one other plant into semi-hydro.
Partly philodendron.
Exactly. And you had kind of coached me through it after our conversation. And it's been such an interesting year of growth, but the plants are so happy in this growing media. And so slowly now I'm incorporating more plants. I'm certainly definitely still using soil all the time. But sometimes if I'm like feeling sassy, I'll put something in passive hydro instead of soil. And it's been a really fun experiment. So I know a lot of our listeners have experimented since that episode as well. They write me on Instagram a lot. And so here are like my main takeaways. Number one, it's great to be left alone. Like it's really low maintenance. Number two, fertilizing is still a little intimidating to me. I feel like I never know if I'm really doing it right. And then number three, like my plants have grown. So now I feel like I really know how to set plants up in LECA, but now I have plants that have flourished and have grown crazy roots. And the roots are like all coming out of the net pots. And I'm like, oh my God, what do we do now that the plants are getting bigger?
Right.
It's like one thing to set them up. So I guess my first question is, how does the net pot thing work when you have roots start to grow out of the pot? Because like my pilea, the pilea that I knocked over has rooted and has like an epic root system now growing all out of the net pot and in the water.
It's crazy, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The roots are just so aggressive when you're growing them in any form of hydroponics, really. For pileas in particular, they've got such a fine root system that it's kind of intimidating to mess with them. And I personally don't like to. It's intimidating for me as well. But if you wanted to up-pot a pilea, you could just take that entire net pot setup that you have it in and place it into a bigger net pot and then fill that surrounding space with more LECA and you're good to go.
So I don't take the LECA out of that net pot because I guess it's porous anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's for pileas or anything that has a really thin, fibrous root system that you just don't want to disturb. You can just size it up that way.
So now what about my orchid? My orchid that was like on its deathbed when I put it in semi-hydro is still hanging in there. I brought it to show you. It's grown new leaves. It's grown some really healthy aerial roots.
Yeah.
But those thicker orchid roots are definitely starting to go through the bottom of the net pot. So if you have something with a more substantial root, like an orchid or maybe a philodendron or an aroid, is there a rule of thumb for that as well?
So for orchids with their root systems, you really just don't want to disturb them. If you can carefully pull it out without damaging the roots, then definitely pull it out and then move it up to a bigger.
And just leave the LECA that it's attached on the roots.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Now for aroids, I'm ruthless with them. I've got a couple Monstera deliciosas here that they just grow so aggressively with their roots, but I don't necessarily want to buy a bigger pot for them. So what I'll do is I'll have my husband hold the inner pot up. I'll take a sterilized knife and I will just slice everything from the bottom.
Wow. So you'll just cut the roots back.
Yes. I don't even pull it out of the pot because it would just be a huge mess. And it's just a huge root mess that's in there. So yeah, what I'll do is I'll just kind of slice everything sticking out of that net pot or that inner pot.
You like give it a shave.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's so interesting. And that doesn't affect the plant? Like the plant doesn't get upset or the plant can still continue to grow new leaves and all that?
So far, yes. Okay. In my experience, we haven't had any issues with it. Just last week, we repotted all of our other smaller Monsteras, and I wanted to put those into bigger pots and like their forever pots. So what I ended up doing is I just pulled everything out. I mean, it was a bit of work because some of the roots were really like grown into the net pots. And then I just went and root pruned. So anything that looked not 100%, I went ahead and trimmed that off. Any damages that happened while I was pulling it out of the net pot, trimmed that off as well. And then any secondary and tertiary roots or any of those roots that are branching off of that main juicy root, I went ahead and trimmed those off as well. Actually, I posted a story of me doing it. I got so many like,
haters.
Like, why would you, haters? They just couldn't understand. Why would you do that? That's like years of work for that plant. And my take on that is kind of just like, well, it'll grow back.
Right.
It allows the root zone to have a little bit more breathing space when it moves into its new home. So yeah. Root pruning, like I wouldn't be afraid of it. As long as the overall health of the root zone is good, then there's nothing wrong with a little bit of root pruning.
Yeah, it stimulates more growth too.
It when does, you prune it. Yeah.
Okay, that's very interesting. Also, you have the most gorgeous variegated Albo. Is that an Albo?
It's one of the Albo twins. My husband got it for me for my birthday a couple of years ago. And he surprised me with two of them. I don't know how he was able to finagle that, but that's one of them.
If you guys want to see this, it's like a jaw-dropping Albo. You have to check the YouTube video out. It's in Kay's screen on the YouTube video. Oh my God, it's unbelievable. So anyway, now that I'm like distracted by that plant. So is it bad to leave the roots in the water?
It is if your plants are not getting enough light.
Okay.
So Daryl, he's been on your show before.
Oh, yeah. From Houseplant Journal.
Yeah. He stresses a lot on the importance of light when it comes to plant care. And I absolutely agree with him in that sense where your plants just need the right amount of light for it to thrive. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about roots that are being saturated in their water reservoir, it's fine so long as it's receiving enough light to photosynthesize and to take up that water. Now, if you take a plant that's grown into its reservoir and stick it into a dark corner or a room with no sufficient light, then the plant isn't working to drink up all of that water and those nutrients, and it ends up just sitting there. It's stagnant and it just starts to rot.
Okay, this is another question. With the reservoir and the net pot, the goal is to have the bottom third of the LECA in the net pot submerged in water, right?
Yes.
So is the goal to keep the roots in that top two thirds? And once the roots start growing into that bottom third, that's when it's time to start up potting?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. So all of my Hoyas on the Hoya wall, I've never repotted them. And I want to say more than half of them have roots that have just completely taken over the reservoir area. Mm-hmm. And they're fine. And that's because they've gotten so much light there.
Right.
But then I mentioned earlier with our Monsteras, where I prefer to just shave off everything that's in the reservoir. They live in areas in the house where they get sufficient light. But with the seasons affecting how much light they're getting, I feel that it's just, I'm more comfortable with not having those roots sit in there and just kind of making the plant work to get its nutrients instead of just sitting in its nutrients. It just depends on, I guess, your plant health and kind of like the setup of your growing environment and how comfortable you are with how much light that plant is receiving. So it'll be different for every plant, I think.
Yeah. My Pilea roots have definitely grown through the LECA, through the net pot, and they've been sitting in water, but they're also under my grow light. So in my grow shelf, and I haven't had an issue with the roots like rotting or anything like that.
Yeah.
And the orchid, it hasn't bloomed for me yet. So maybe I should pot it up, but I'm just like happy it has like nice supple leaves. So the one thing that I have realized about semi-hydro that can be a problem is because it's so low maintenance and you just like refill the reservoir and then you don't have to think about it for a couple of weeks. I did have one bout when I moved this summer that I just like fully forgot about all of my semi-hydro plants for like 2 months. So all of a sudden I saw this other orchid and it looked awful. Like the leaves were so wrinkled. I was like, oh my God, I think I killed this plant. And Billy's mom gave it to me. And I was like, shit. But I whipped up some new nutrient solution, refed everyone. I gave everyone like a really big wash. I washed every flush and then gave everyone a big drink. And it's wild how the orchid bounced back and has no wrinkles in the leaves. It sucked up almost all the water, like more quickly than usual. But the plant really bounced back in an unbelievable way.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I definitely have gone through episodes where I forget about them. Mm-hmm. Not so much forget about them, but I choose to focus on other things. Like when my clients were visiting earlier this month, or I guess last month. Yeah, you know, I decided to spend more time with family and less time with plants and Instagram. There were definitely a lot of empty and dry reservoirs, but the plants are so forgiving.
Yeah.
Just like you said, that first fill, I mean, it disappears almost within 24 hours. Once it gets back into its rhythm, the plants are like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
On to the next leaf.
Totally. Certainly not endorsing this. Certainly not telling
people
to do this, but just being honest and upfront about my experience and that I am not perfect. And I am very much still learning this practice and also not a perfect plant parent. And that's okay. Okay. So that was interesting. Now that brings up a question. One of the listeners had a question about like, are there ways that you can avoid root rot?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest ways to avoid it when you're converting is just to make sure that the roots are in A+ health when you do that conversion. So that means no organic media on them and you're pruning off anything that looks suspicious. If it's not bright, well, if the roots are intended to be bright white, which most of them are, if there's anything that isn't bright white, just go ahead and prune it off with a sterilized tool and that'll help a lot. Now, the next step in that, of course, is to provide an environment where your plant will recover from all that trauma and that stress. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of stress for the plants. So, you know, you don't want to convert a plant and then stick it in a dark room and expect it to thrive. Because again, it goes back to having light and having the sufficient amount of light to photosynthesize. So that's a really great way to reduce the risk.
I think we can all say that we know that we have like the sweet spots in our house. Mm-hmm. Like for me, it's my grow shelves that get that like grow light, kind of bright indirect, but like on the brighter side. And whenever I have plants that are in trouble, they always get rotated into the grow shelf because I know that that's just going to set them up. So
absolutely,
that's good advice. So when you're transitioning a plant, make sure that you're setting it up I would assume not too bright of light because you don't want the plant to like freak out, but putting the plant in your sweet spots and not shoving it in a dark corner.
And then you also want to just keep up with your flushes. A lot of times if your roots are sitting in the reservoir already, there's always that chance for bacteria and fungal issues to start. So doing those regular flushes just really helps. And it could be something as quick as like a 30-second hold under the sink, and then you're good to go.
What's something you advised me about when I was, I don't know, sometime this year, where you were saying it's really important to clean out the reservoirs because they collect a lot of weird stuff. And it's as important to kind of flush the plants as it is to really wipe the reservoir down before you put more nutrient-rich water in it, right?
Right.
Algae and stuff will collect there.
Absolutely. And with nutrients and fertilizer, whether you're using organic or not, it's got a lot of salts in it. And so you don't want that salt buildup to accumulate in the reservoir. You'll see it in the LECA. You'll get like these salt crystals that kind of form at the top. But in the reservoir itself, you want to make sure that you're cleaning that out, just so that, I'm going to get some heat on this, but like I don't check pH. I know we mentioned this before, like allowing your nutrients to sit in the reservoir for too long and not refreshing it and not cleaning out your reservoir will affect the pH.
For sure.
And if you're not cognizant of that, then that'll just become a headache and a problem down the line.
Guilty. We're learning. We're blooming and growing.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so funny. I've got some questions about nutrients for you because I feel like for semi-hydro, I think most people, that's the scary part, is that you're not potting up a plant and trusting that the soil is giving your roots nutrients. You're creating a nutrient-rich liquid that you're sitting these net pots in. So the pressure's kind of on. So now that I've had plants in semi-hydro for four seasons, do you do the same mixture for all four seasons, or do you like cycle it or change it? Maybe in the growing season, you do more. I don't know. What's the deal?
I definitely adjust it. But before I get into that, let me say that doing a balanced like 30-30-30 fertilizer for all of your plants will be just fine. Okay, let me preface it with just that. It's totally fine. The only thing that I would probably adjust is either frequency or your dilution. So obviously, like in the winter, we're not receiving as much light. We just want to probably dilute it more. So if you're doing half strength during the growing season, maybe cut it down to quarter strength or even less than that. But you always want to make sure that you're providing nutrients to your plants, because the LECA, it's an inert media. There's no substance there for it. It literally is just a vessel to move water and nutrients to the plant. Now, for me, I don't know. I have no answer for you why I do this, but I do adjust throughout the year. I guess it's just my preference. For the Hoyas, I definitely adjust because the end goal with the Hoyas are always to see their blooms. Mm. So I take the cues from the plants on when to adjust for that. But for all of my foliage plants, the Monsteras, when I see that they've kind of slowed down on growing and also with the seasons, I'll kind of cut back on how much nutrients I'm giving them. In the summer, I go pretty hard with the fertilizer.
Okay.
But then I'll cut back to about a quarter strength during the winter.
So in the summer, if we're going by a standard 30-30-30, whatever you're fertilizing your house plants with, you're going to cut it by what? Like, what is the dilution? Is that a word? What are you diluting it to versus in the winter? You said you're doing a fourth in the winter. And then what are you doing in the summer?
In the summer, probably about half strength.
Okay.
Yeah. I like to err on the side of caution when it comes to fertilizing. Thankfully, knock on wood, I've never over-fertilized something, but it is a concern. So it's always safer to go less, and the damage would be far less than if you were to like burn the roots because you were super motivated to fertilize.
100%. That happened to me once because I was a knucklehead when I was still learning plants. Mm-hmm. I got sent to cutting and I don't know why I like put a little fertilizer in the water that the cutting was rooting in. I don't know why. I think I thought like, oh, this will be great. Fertilizer is good for plants. Like, let's do that. And the plant like burned, like the edges burned, and I was able to save it, but it was a fancy plant and it was sent from like a friend and it was very scary. So anyway, yes, now I always err on the side of caution for sure. So if you want to amp it up in the growing season or the blooming season, you can kind of play with it, but you're definitely not taking the solution that you fertilize your houseplants with and putting it in your semi-hydro things. You're absolutely diluting it to at least a third.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So whatever the recommended dose is on the label, I never go more than half of that.
Okay. That's a great rule of thumb. Because I think some people think, oh, okay, I'll just put my fertilizer water in my reservoir and that'll be good. But don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we've talked about fertilizer. So now we've had some listener questions. You had really gone into detail about how you prep plants with Azomax, which is a systemic pest killer pesticide. Yes. So whenever you bring all your plants home, you soak them in Azomax. So one of our listeners asked, Priscilla Yip asked, can you elaborate on how you use Azomax? Do you actually put it in the water or reservoir that you feed the plants with to prevent pests? Or is it just that initial dunk? And how frequently do you use it?
It's that initial dunk or that soak. I like to give them a little spa treatment with their Azomax bubble bath. And then after that, I actually only do foliar application.
Okay.
I'll mix it in a spray bottle. And then quarterly, I'll take the plant outside or into the shower, give a nice rinse down, and then I'll spray it down on every surface that I can reach and just kind of let it sit there and dry out, and then it'll go back to where it is. Now, if I'm actively combating a pest, which one of my Birkins has spider mites.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And spider mites are like the worst because they gain immunity to pesticides. So you've got to like alternate them.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So if I'm actively combating something, then the application will probably be every 3 to 7 days, just depending on what I'm using.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I feel like you're a very aggressive pest control person, even just listening about the Azomax bath, because you soak them in an Azomax bath, what, for like an hour?
About 30 minutes.
Yeah. That's like so legit. Mm-hmm. What are the signs of a healthy semi-hydro plant and healthy roots? What does a healthy root look like in LECA or pond?
Depending on what the roots are supposed to look like. I say that because as you see with like the pilea, those roots are fibrous, they're brownish red. And then when you look at monsteras, philodendrons are like bright white, they're thick
and much turgid.
Yeah. So first being familiar with what the roots are supposed to look like will definitely help you to understand if your roots in Passive Hydro are healthy. A lot of times I like to lift inner pots out of their reservoir just to kind of look around the net pot or even the bottom of that inner pot. And when you see healthy root tips kind of working their way around the LECA, then you know that it's happy and you know that it's searching for that water source.
Something that was interesting to me on my YouTube channel, I document this. I did an experiment in quarantine when I was going crazy and I propagated my Raphidophora tetraspermum in 4 different ways, soil, water, LECA, and sphagnum moss. Mm-hmm. And what blew my mind was the LECA cuttings rooted way more than any of the other cuttings, and the systems that grew in the roots were much more complex. Like each root had a bunch of other roots coming off of it, where the water root grew just like 4 big roots, but the LECA roots had like all sorts of little roots that were like attaching to the LECA. It was really interesting.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the moisture to air ratio that you get with LECA. When you're growing in LECA, the entire root zone remains humid. I don't know how humid, but it seems like it's humid enough that it kind of helps engage that root growth a little better.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting hypothesis.
Yeah. Whereas like when you're rooting in water, you get those really strong, thick roots, but they don't branch off quite as quickly. And in my non-scientific opinion, I like to think it's because the roots are kind of spoiled. They're already sitting in the water, so they don't have to work as hard to try and find that water source. Whereas when you're rooting in LECA, it's just moist enough surrounding the root zone that the roots become a little more ambitious and they kind of look for that.
Gotta hustle.
Yeah, they gotta work for it.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So I base that off of no like scientific background whatsoever. It's kind of just me thinking out loud.
Yeah, totally. No, it's definitely like how I root most of my plants now. Like if I have the energy to do it in a LECA setup, and like go to my basement and get my box of LECA instead of just stick it in a glass of water. Like I do. I always try and do it that way because it really isn't so successful.
I've heard that the transition from when you're propagating over back to soil sometimes is a little more friendly when you're doing it in LECA versus water. Like there's less shock to plants.
Right. Because they're already used to having something available and air. than with water.
I don't know from experience because I've never transitioned anything to soil, but from what I've heard, it's a lot easier to transition from a lepid propagated plant than a water propagated plant.
Totally. I want to hit you with a couple of more listener questions and then we'll get to the big LECA versus PON lechuza.
Yeah, let's do it.
So my art cat's plants wants to know how low can you let the water get in the reservoir? So you shoot to have a third of the net pot submerged in water. How low can you kind of risk before you're risking not having a good setup anymore?
You can go bone dry.
Really?
Yeah, as long as it's not for a prolonged period of time. It's totally fine because when you think about the porous state of LECA, it'll hold moisture in there even when there's no water in the reservoir anymore. So the plant's still able to pull even just a little bit. So if you forget to refill, so which is
LECA
which
is holding the water.
Yeah, kind of like with bark.
Right.
Like when you use orchid bark, like it retains a lot of moisture in it. So even though the surrounding areas are dry, the plant's still able to pull water and nutrients. When it needs it.
But we want to shoot for a third. Actually, here's the opposite of that question. How high is too high?
Over a third.
Oh, a half is way bad.
Look, if you're going, say you're going out of town, right? And you want to top everything off and you want to go up to a half, it'll be fine. It's fine. But you definitely don't want like a full glass of water.
Right. Here's a question I have that I have not nailed yet. A lot of my reservoirs are opaque. And so I can't see exactly where the water line is. And it drives me freaking crazy. You have to like kind of think, okay, displacement, when I submerge the net pot, it's going to raise this high. Have you figured this out yet with opaque pot?
Yeah, back when I was still using opaque pots for the outer pot or for the reservoir, I got a little creative. So what I would do is before all the planting even happens, I would fill it up to about one third. Mm-hmm. And then I would kind of like check to where it is. And then you can just draw a little line inside the pot.
Okay.
To where that line is. One third displacement. It's not too much. So it'll probably rise slightly somewhere between one third and one half. Mm-hmm. And it's fine.
Like,
I don't get too crazy about that.
I've tried the line trick.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
And then you can like feel it too.
I
feel like at one point I got familiar with how it felt. Like I could feel when it hits the water. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of just guesstimate like, okay, that seems like it's down one third.
That's interesting because people talk about with soil, you can figure out how when the soil has dried out and it's time to water by the weight of the pot. Essentially with a net pot too. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. What about trellising? What if I want to put a moss pole in LECA or PON? Do you have any hacks for that?
Yeah. Just use anything that can resist water. So all of my moss poles are made of PVC pipes.
Okay. So no bamboo, no wood for a base.
You can. You're just going to want to treat the segment of the bamboo or the wood that's going to be going into the reservoir. Or not into the reservoir, but into the LECA. And that's just as easy as dunking it into like a silicone solution or like a silicone paint. So I just kind of dip it in there.
Waterproof.
Exactly, yeah. And that works just fine.
Is there a rule for like where the moss, like if I make my own moss pole and want to put it in, is there a rule for like how low the moss should go under the LECA or if it should sit right on top of the LECA line?
My experience, I've always measured the moss to sit just right above the LECA.
Okay.
Because moss over time will break down.
Mm-hmm. And will be organic, right?
Right. So if you have that in the LECA, then I almost want to say it's kind of just as bad as sticking a plant with soil still in its roots in there.
Okay. That makes sense. Totally. Okay, let's talk about one more thing, transitioning plants. So you walk us through exactly how to transition plants in the first episode. We're not going to dive into that, but what happens when you transition a plant and it's not doing well? So we had one listener say, I've had a marble queen pothos in for 2 weeks and it's looking pretty sad. Like, what's an appropriate transition time that you're going to expect a plant to go through shock and be like, I'm good, it's within the 1 week frame versus like, uh-oh, I think maybe this plant isn't adapting. And then how do you troubleshoot that?
I keep a close eye on anything that I convert for about 2 months because anything can happen within those 2 months, right? Within the first couple of weeks, you're going to notice whether or not the plant has taken to the new setup or not. And if it's looking really sad, first things first is you just got to pull it out and inspect the roots. Sometimes those roots that have been adapted to soil just isn't going to take to the LECA. And that's totally fine, right? So you just want to make sure that you're going to prune all those back, and anything that looks mushy or anything like that, go ahead and prune that back as well. And then restart it, just replant it, and then it'll root. I like to use heating mats or seedling mats just to keep the root zone warm.
Okay.
Because that definitely helps encourage more root growth.
So you just put the pot on the heating mat.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
My ICU, my plant ICU, consists of a large heating mat and like one of the few grow lights that I actually use in the house. And that's where I put a lot of the smaller new converts, where just to let them kind of hang out, stay warm, and get an ample amount of light.
Interesting.
Yeah. I love seedling mats. Like a lot of people say you don't need them, but I like them. I just like that they keep it nice and cozy and warm.
We have an interview with, you introduced me to him, Doug Chamberlain, a Hoya interview that's out. And he talks about his setup. He has like whole greenhouses mm-hmm. in his house, which is so interesting. Okay, cool. So a heating mat can help, but you're not afraid to completely take the plant out, prune whatever's struggling, and then just repot and know that it'll get worse before it gets better, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, you almost have to. If the plant looks like it's unhappy, I definitely experienced this with my philodendron heteracium, bar heteracium, or micans. The first time that I converted it, it was curling. It didn't look happy. And so I was like, well, this is too nice of a plant to just let sit there. So I pulled it out. And sure enough, it was beautifully rooted when I got it. But those roots were just so well adapted to being in soil that they didn't appreciate being in LECA. So I pruned all that back and then just repotted it, kept it on a seedling mat for about a month. And then surely enough, I saw that it started to perk up again.
That's awesome. Okay. So last but not least, something you're getting way more into this year, and I had no idea, I had to Google when you texted it to me first, was LECA versus PON, P-O-N, PON Lechuza. So for people who want to like level up their game, Asafhydro 2.0, can you give us an overview of LECA versus PON?
You know, they're just two different types of media. LECA, they're just our Cocoa Puffs, right? Mm-hmm. The clay balls. And then PON is a proprietary blend that Lechuza, which is a German company that they created, which is just like the perfect mixture of lava rock, pumice, and zeolite, a bit of, what do they put in there? Like a slow release fertilizer that's mixed in there too.
Okay.
It's like a soil replacement. So okay. Rather than using soil, you can use PON in place of that. And as pretty as PON looks,
it looks like kind of gravel.
It does, but it's got like that really gorgeous blue to it.
Yeah.
Because I think the zeolite, like whatever they use for their zeolite, it's like, it's a really pretty blue. I actually am very selective on when I use PON.
Okay.
First and foremost, it's expensive. So okay. I'm not interested whatsoever in converting everything to PON.
Okay.
But second, some plants are going to like PON more than LECA. Mm-hmm. Well, at least in my experience, that's how it's been. So for the plants that I pot exclusively in PON, I do all of my Ripsalis in PON.
Okay.
Any epiphytic cacti I have in PON, anthuriums. Okay. And this is like, yeah, all of my anthuriums are very happy in PON. I had one anthurium superbum in LECA and it did great for like the first couple months. And then all of a sudden things just kind of tanked. And when I pulled it up, all of the roots were desiccated. So I'm thinking what happened there was the root zone got a little too cold with being in LECA. So I tried again, I got a new superbum and I put it in PON and it's just been so happy. So happy.
Really?
And all my other anthuriums are really happy in PON as well.
Do you think that's because there's less, they're smaller particles, so there's more surface area?
Yeah, maybe like it's just cozier in there. I know I have to be very careful about the pot to root ratio when I'm using PON. You never want there to be too much pot space. Otherwise, the PON, because it is a lot more dense and there's smaller particles, it'll be a lot more saturated than LECA is.
Okay.
So I always make sure that the roots are almost like crowded. Like you want to make sure that the roots are crowded in their pot. And the reason why I started growing anthuriums in PON was, it was actually under the advisement of my friend Kevin, Kevin's Green Pets. He lives out in Germany. He's had a lot more experience with growing in Lechuza PON and the Lechuza system. And he's got like a great collection of aeroids. And so, you know, one day I asked him, I was like, hey, I'm finally getting a clarinervium, LECA or PON. And he was like, well, from the experience of other folks here, it does great in LECA for a while. And then all of a sudden, it either stops growing or it just tanks. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of been consistent throughout. He's like, but folks say that growing it in PON seems to work just fine. So I was like, okay. So I actually like cut my clarinervium in half, actually in thirds, because the stem was just so long. And the main plant, I planted it in that. And then I tried to propagate the other stumps in PON as well. And it's just worked out really well. We're at a point now where the PON is almost like spilling out of its inner pot because the roots have overgrown in there.
So oh, and they're pushing it out. Okay.
It is. Yeah. So I'm still kind of holding back on repotting this because we're going to go from a 5-inch to a 7-inch pot. And I'm not sure how comfortable I am moving it because mm-hmm. it'll be a lot more space in there for the roots. But eventually, I guess we'll get there. But they've been really happy. Yeah, the anthuriums have been really happy.
So with the PON, is it the same setup as LECA? It's in a net pot and you're filling the bottom of the reservoir up to 1/3 of the net pot. Is it like the same setup?
It is. Yeah, it really is.
So it's just a different substrate. It's the same passive hydro setup. It's just a different mm-hmm. media that you're putting it in.
Yes.
And the PON, there's no nutrients coming out of any of those. It's still inorganic, like nothingness, right?
Lechuza mixes in a slow release fertilizer in the PON.
Okay.
And the product label says that it's rated for 6 months mm-hmm. of release. And then after that, I know in Germany, you can buy their fertilizer. You can't buy it here. But what I've always done is just I've supplemented the fertilizer with what I use.
Okay. We had a couple of people write in saying, what are the best and worst plants for passive hydro? So mm-hmm. I'd love to ask you that question. And then also PON versus LECA. It sounds like you have some preferences.
Yeah.
Well, let's start off with this question. Are there any plants that don't do well in passive hydro?
I'm going to quote myself from our last episode.
Okay.
Any plant can grow in yes. passive hydro, so long as you can provide the right conditions for it to thrive. So I personally don't grow any of my arid plants in passive hydro because I can't provide desert conditions in my home.
Okay.
So what I opt to do is I use PON as the media, but I use it just as I would soil. So it has a drainage hole at the bottom, and then I just water it like I do like a torrential downpour type of watering, and then I let it completely dry out. That's for the arid plant.
Interesting. So every time you water a torrential downpour, are you watering with fertilized water or you're using
now,
the slow release in the PON?
Just the slow release.
Okay.
I've only just this growing season started growing cacti and succulents.
Brave of you. I'm braver than me.
We'll see what happens after this winter.
Okay.
I just don't have the right conditions to grow it in passive hydro. So I've opted to use PON as the media, which kind of is like an extra buffer because it won't retain as much moisture as like soil or whatever. What do people traditionally pot succulents in?
Cactus mix. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it's definitely not as dense as that.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure I could overwater it, but I think my chances are less.
So then the LECA versus PON in your household, obviously the PON is expensive, so that's going to occur. You were saying you prefer your anthuriums.
Ripsalis, any of the epiphytic cacti outside of Ripsalis, so epiphyllums.
So bigger roots, big juicy roots, not like a pilea.
I think actually a pilea would be okay.
Okay.
If it were rooted in PON. It would be fine. And then for my Hoyas, that my big trailing Hoyas that require something denser to hold it in place, I opt to use PON. So the compactas, the linearis, and the polynuras, they're all in PON. Now, granted, the linearis and the polynura do prefer to be a little more moist, but I have also grown those two in LECA and they did just fine.
Interesting.
But I need that density to hold it down. You know me, I love platters of plants. Mm-hmm. And with the compacta, there's just no way. Well, I'm not going to say there's no way because I have done it, but it's very difficult to convert a compacta over to passive hydro using LECA because it's just so hard to keep it in place.
Falls over. Yeah,
it does. It spills out because it's so heavy. Thankfully though, with the PON, it's just heavy enough that it can weigh down the plant until it establishes in there and kind of can hold on to its own.
Very cool. for listeners who are interested in learning more about Pond versus LECA, Kay is going to give us a tutorial, a demonstration on potting up Pond and LECA on YouTube. So you can click the link in the show notes to check it out. Kay, this has been such a great, great follow-up episode. And I think the most fun thing about talking to you about passive hydro, I have to keep correcting myself, passive hydro, not semi-hydro, and also just my adventures is, as a plant parent, I feel like this is just a fun experiment. Like there's no perfect science, admittedly, I'm like not nailing it at all. But it's been really fun to just kind of expand my knowledge and experiment and not take myself so seriously and just like try something. It's like a subsect of plants. So I really appreciate you coming on and helping our community stay curious, not so serious, and always growing. If you're interested in passive hydro at all, you must follow Kay because there's just so much information you share. So where can we find you?
I am over at In Rooted Love. And yeah, I'd love to see you guys over there. We'd love to share just kind of our experience and what we're doing. We've started recording conversion videos as well. Cause I get asked a lot on how to convert things and stuff like that. So I figured I might as well just kind of show you guys. I mean, it's no fun watching me clean roots for 20 minutes, but we cut all that out.
Right. You just tighten it up, fast forward, get the time lapse going.
Yeah. But definitely come see me over at In Rooted Love. I love chatting about all things plants.
Yes. And Kay will be linked in the show notes. So thank you again, Kay. You are the best.
Thank you, Maria. It's been so fun being on again.
Joy. Okay, plant friends, I hope that this episode makes this whole concept of passive hydro feel less intimidating. Let it be your permission slip. I really was so inspired by Kay. And when I originally did these interviews a couple of years ago, I ended up moving a couple of my plants, like an orchid I had and a few houseplants, into LECA and into semi-hydro for a while. And it was so fun. The only reason I'm not still growing in semi-hydro is because too many of my plants are in soil. So because of that, like it's actually more work for me because I have to do half the semi-hydro and half of my normal soil watering and fertilizing. But this idea of like Kay having all of her plants in this one uniform growing media and being able to really manage them in such a low maintenance way. Like this is such a great option for low maintenance plant parents. So I hope you experiment, report back to me, and make sure to check out Kay's demos. I think I have one on my YouTube, and then also go follow her at Inrooted Love. She's awesome. And her boys are so cute. And I hope this was helpful. So until next time, keep growing joy, friends. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.